The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. There's a lot going on of interest to me, and we're going to go some different directions on today's show. Eric Newman, who covers Northern Arizona University football. The Lumberjacks are here in the Valley a week from today. I cannot wait for college football to get started. We will get a view of the Jacks with Chris Ball into his fourth season. NAU beat U of A last year. Does that mean a thing for next Thursday's game? We'll talk with Eric Newman. Cam Cox is going to join us from Tennessee. Cam is a sports director over at 12 News. We're going to do a media podcast with Cam on process, his journey, what got him to be in television. I found with these media podcasts through the years, I'll hear from people that are in other professions, doctors, lawyers, dentists, whatever, teachers, and they all want to get into broadcast. They all want to be sports announcers. Okay, so what's the process? What does it look like for a guy like Cam Cox? You know, his day probably started at 6 a.m. this morning in Nashville and won't end until 11 o'clock tonight. Sports happens nights, weekends, and holidays. It's funny when I teach or when I talk to people who want to get into the business and you know, you sure you want to do this? You know, oh, I get to go to games. Yep. Oh, I get to, you know, be there. And yep. Ready to work nights, weekends, holidays. What? Huh? What? Yeah. Yeah. The baseball game at 7, you have to be there at 2. You don't know when the game's going to end. Doesn't mean it's not a great business to be in, but I found through the years of doing these media podcasts, people like them. So we'll hear from Cam Cox. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their support. If you've not seen ALS to Ashes, the Corey Nocta story documentary that Jordan Spurgeon and Brandy Aguilar put together, I watched it last night again on Bally Sports Arizona, our partners on the TV side. It is tremendous. It is up on the website. Just click on it. It's about 20 minutes. So on your day today, when you're sitting there saying, I just wish I could be anywhere but here at work, we will give you something to take your mind off of work. And that's what this show is for as well. Entertain, inform, inform, entertain. And to that end, I think it's very entertaining. I want to start with some basketball stuff today because Patrick Beverley is in the news. Patrick Beverley is where I'm going to lead off on because I don't know of any other athlete. Give me another athlete in Arizona sports right now on an opposing team that's as hated, that is as big a villain as Patrick Beverley the next time the Lakers of all teams. He was traded today from Utah to the Lakers. Pat Bev with LeBron James walking through the tunnel in downtown Phoenix, Suns v. Lakers. It will be awesome. It's just going to be awesome. It's not like the late, great Kobe Bryant, who I just loved when Kobe would come into town because I would see, you know, a majestic, badass basketball player, one of the top ever. Patrick Beverley, he just comes in to stir bleep up. That's it. It's like when Danny Ainge was on the Suns back in the day, or when Danny was with the Blazers, or when Danny was with, you know, the Celtics. If he wasn't on your team, you hated him. Hated him. And Patrick Beverley, that's the deal. P. Bev in Phoenix with LeBron. And I'm looking at this move and I'm like, man, the Lakers were the 11th seed last year. 11th. Okay, they punched out their coach. New coach comes in, Darvin Ham. What have they done so far here in the offseason? They've added Pat Beverley. LeBron's going to be a year older. He's going to miss games, you would think. At some point, they start slowing down. It happens. Anthony Davis can't stay healthy on the court. And Patrick Beverley didn't really care much for Russell Westbrook, if I remember my timelines correctly. And right now, I would say, looking, I'll tie the Suns in here in a second on this, I would say that the Lakers, if you're talking about a team that's just kind of meandering, they'd have to be right there at the top in the Western Conference. If they moved with this deal from 11 to 8, 9 play-in game, I would say no. But look, Patrick Beverley is one of those agitators. He's like at the top of the agitator list. And when he walks in the arena, it's going to be electric. if you're a Suns fan, you remember Pat Bev pushing Chris Paul in the back after the Clippers series and just the way that he played. I mean, when I saw that last night and then this morning, it's like, give me somebody else who's as hated. You know, go over to the Cardinals. Is there anybody up at the Seahawks that's just, you just hate? No. Is there anybody at the 49ers? You just, no. Is there anybody with the Rams? You just, no. Okay, let's go over to hockey. No. Let's make that real quick. Let's go over like the Dodgers right now. Is there someone on the Dodgers? There's no Yasiel Puig. Fans hated Yasiel Puig when the Dodgers roll into town. This current group of Dodgers, there's not somebody. No one hates Clayton Kershaw. You know, it's Mookie Betts. You can't hate Mookie Betts. Cody Bellinger's a local kid. You know, just go around. So there's no one with the Dodgers. So it leads back to, if we're talking about the big sports, it's Patrick Beverley all day long with LeBron James alongside of him. So I love villains in sports. If you don't have villains in sports, it's not as much fun. It just isn't. It's a couple of teams that are competing and they go through the motions and, you know, that's it. You have some villains involved, well, then that's a whole different story. You know, that's a whole different deal. So I think it's great for the Suns-Lakers rivalry. I don't know how it helps the Lakers out. Pretty clear Utah is going to go into tank mode. Like, Donovan Mitchell's got to get traded in Utah before opening night or before, you know, the middle of January. Like, are the Suns better today than they were when the playoffs ended? And I look at them and say, I know Mikal Bridges is a year older, so sure. But Chris Paul's a year older. Devin Booker's a year older. He moved the decimal point. He's coming into his own as a superstar. Some will say he is a superstar. Some will say he's a star. He hasn't arrived a superstar because he hasn't won big yet. You know, a move like Patrick Beverley for Utah tells me, yeah, we're going to go into tank mode here. We've got Bogdanovich, and we've got Donovan Mitchell, and we got Mike Conley. We really don't have much else. We already traded Gobert. We're just moving contracts around. We're going to build for something down the road. It's really interesting to see what's going on in the West. The story of Chet Holmgren is in the news cycle today. So the Oklahoma City Thunder draft Holmgren, the 7-footer out of Gonzaga, after one season. And he plays in a pickup or in a charity game. Let me be clear on that, a charity game. Up in Seattle, hurts his foot, gone for the year. And there's these people that will say, well, you know, what a stupid thing to do. Playing a basketball game, a charity game. Well, I don't know. Where are they supposed to play in the offseason? Do they just get wrapped in saran wrap and they're not allowed to go play anywhere? You have to play. Slippery floor. LeBron played in this game that he got hurt in. So I don't know what you can do. If you're an Oklahoma City fan, or I saw some NBA fans say, oh, this is outrageous, how stupid can you be, and da-da-da-da-da. Look, it's not like a football player can go out and play football. That's why they have their off-season workouts. Maybe the NBA should do the same sort of thing, but in the players' union, it's not how it works. So guys got to get their runs in. Got to go on a run. I remember watching Amari back in the day. He would play in a summer league. I'm in downtown Phoenix at the Jewish Community Center. If I needed Amari, I would go to the JCC and I would find Amari, and he'd be playing. And he'd be playing just against dudes. I remember the late Mark Eaton was down there just getting in a run in one night, and I'm hanging out to talk to Amari, and it's like, that's Mark bleeping Eaton. What is going on here? He's a hockey goalie too. But where are basketball players supposed to go to get their run, guys? You know, you got to look at the sport and say, what can you do here? Because you've got to stay in some sort of shape. So that's on my mind today. Don Coryell's on my mind today. So Don Coryell, it's been announced, the late St. Louis Cardinal, San Diego Charger, when they were the Chargers head coach, finalist for the 2023 Pro Football Hall of Fame. If you're thinking, like, Brad, why are you going on Don Coryell today? Why aren't you talking about backup linebackers that are going to make the Cardinals scrimmaging with Tennessee? Because I just don't care. Please get through this week, and that's it. Please just get me to Kansas City. Please. I'm not going to waste time on that nonsense. Don Coryell, without Don Coryell, Bill Walsh probably doesn't steal some of his stuff and go lead the 49ers to Super Bowl. Dan Fouts has said without Don Coryell, he doesn't make the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And he's probably out of football without Don Coryell. Don Coryell, if we look at offenses and how they have evolved through the years, Don Coryell was at the forefront of it. And yeah, I'm a Cub reporter, and I'm watching back in the mid-80s, John Jefferson and Charlie Joyner and Wes Chandler and Chuck Muncy and Lionel Little Train James, and I'm watching the ball just fly all around the field, and they're throwing up points right and left. They were fun. They fired the cannon off down in the stadium. Stadium was still a dump. I'd go down to the locker room afterwards, go over to the Raiders' side, and there'd be the late, great Lyle Alzado and John Matuszak, and their bodies were disfigured from taking stuff. And there's Ken Stabler, and there's Cliff Branch, and there's all these great players, right? So I'm seeing Coryell. I'm seeing Eric Coryell. Eric Coryell, if you look back at St. Louis, if you look at San Diego State where he coached before, Don Coryell, it's like, why is he not in the Hall of Fame? Innovators can't be in the Hall of Fame. No Don Coryell, no Ernie Zampezi. Zamp was one of the great offensive minds in football. And, you know, I would think that the Cardinals would have something for Don Coryell, too. I'm not saying Ring of Honor or any of that, but there's got to be some place where we're talking about the history of the St. Louis Cardinals and Don Coryell. And I'm pleased to see that he's at least a finalist. I have no idea why he's not in yet. None. Next time we have Peter on, I'll talk. Peter King, we'll talk about that. So that's on my mind today. I watched the Diamondbacks game pretty whenever Zach Gallen starts, I find myself watching. I'm one of those guys that can handle watching baseball on a team that is out of the race as long as they're playing kids and as long as I see a young, I see a pitcher that is developing into a number one starter, I'll watch. You know, I may watch when Zach Davies throws just to see if there's something there. But last night I just sat here in my office and did my thing, and Zach Gallen's blowing him away. He's gone 27 and a third innings now without allowing a run. You have to go to the Brandon Webb, Andy Benes cards in order to see someone who's had that dominant a run in a Diamondbacks uniform. And it's really cool to see because, you know, with Madison Bumgarner just fading off into the abyss and they skipped his last start. I was on with Bruce Jacobs and Dale Helstray this morning over on 1580, and we're talking about him. Bruce has just dug in that Mad Bum needs to be converted to be the role of a closer. I'm just like, I don't see Dennis Eckersley there. You know, starting pitcher going to a reliever. So they are off today. They play at Chicago against the White Sox over the weekend. And that is what, the Hamilton bleep show. I got to get to that. So Hamilton football has replaced Tim Daugherty as their defensive coordinator. And Richard Obert, who we had on earlier this week, The Republic wrote about it today. In quoted the attorney for this defensive coordinator. I have been reached out to by this attorney. I'm not putting him on the air. This is just not something that I'm going to go that far down the rabbit hole on or give the attention that, you know, I'm just not going to do that. I am going to say that the kids are the ones here that are the that are being held hostage by this problem. And the attorney says, it doesn't say, I'm reading Richard's story. Obviously, it doesn't say anything about Daugherty, but it begs the question, what's going to happen? I think he's probably going to be placed on paid administrative leave. He's still going to teach, but my feeling is that they're going to fire him at the end of the year. So this attorney has his son on the team, which that's kind of weird because it's got to put the kid in an odd spot, I would think. The attorney says they've sacrificed their defensive coordinator for the playoffs because next Tuesday is the meeting with the AIA. So they're hoping that their postseason is not wiped out. This story has had, and I'm not even going to go into all the stuff off the record, off the offline. Safe to say, I've talked to a lot of people on this one, and it's a bleep show. It's just a bleep show. That's all it is. And you can't, just when you think you can script stuff out, like when we come up with documentaries, could I do a documentary on the history of Hamilton High School? I could. It is the or one of the top academic schools in the state of Arizona. People don't know that. People don't know how many people they've turned out there or how many students they've turned out there. They don't know. But they do know about, well, you know, Terrell Suggs, he came over there and he was recruited, or was he recruited, or wasn't he? And then there's a hazing scandal, and then there's this, and it's just like, you know, you guys want to trash a great school. There's stuff that happens at a lot of schools. I'm a high school dad for the last 16 years. I've seen a lot of stuff. But man, over at Hamilton, it's like they can't get out of their own way. And there's some really good people that are there that have been there a long time that are like complicit without their own knowing. You know, it's like, oh, it's Hamilton. It's got to be bad. No, it's not. It's not. Some of this stuff should have been nipped in the bud. Yeah, for sure. But to get it to a point now where you have an attorney who's got a family member on the team and he's representing the defensive coordinator who's now out, at least for now, it's just a lot. You know, Rock Chulosky, if Rock makes it to be the starting quarterback to open the season, he's one of the best two-sport athletes that we have in Arizona. We need more Rock Chulosky stories. We do. They'll be great. They'll be great. But there's just so much to this story. I would love to sit here and just say, well, there's this and there's that, but I'm not. I'm just not. And I just want them, I want these kids to be able to go out and play and have a high school season, and not because somebody allegedly or certainly did. Everybody saw the screenshots. And what the AI is going to do next Tuesday. So. All right, ASU opens with NAU next Thursday, a week from today. Eric Newman from Flagstaff next. All right, as promised, a new face, a new voice. I've read Eric Newman, sports editor at the Arizona Daily Sun. I have seen Eric Newman with Zach Alvira, and those two fight on over at Arizona Varsity. You know, let's just bury Zach. No, we shouldn't bury Zach right off the top. I mean, I can't just...
We can.
Yeah, well, go ahead. Just have at it. Bury Zach. It's fine. He's worth burying.
He and I have been friends since, I don't know, 2017, 2018, something like that. And, you know, he tries to pretend that he's this humble guy. He doesn't want to be seen, but he's on like 15 different shows. He writes all these articles, you know, wants to be the one breaking the news and everything. So yeah. It's a little bit of a hypocrisy there. So Zach, if you're listening, just to let you know, we know.
Yeah. It's the humble brag, right?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of this going on. He's got a strained rotator cuff doing this. I like that.
That's exactly right.
Eric Newman with us. I wanted to have you on because first to bury Zach, we got that out of the way. But secondly, a week from tonight, Northern Arizona University, Chris Ball's team comes down to take on Arizona State. What do you make out of the team coming down here this year? I know that there's a lot of, well, they beat U of A last year. They could do the same this year. So you're there every day. What do you see?
I think that mentality exists a little bit that, you know, maybe they beat an FBS team and they beat an Arizona FBS team. But I don't think they're exactly thinking that just because that happened, they can do it again. And if it does happen, it's going to be because of, you know, different preparation and everything. They're in a different spot than they were in that Arizona game. They've got a more stable quarterback in RJ Martinez. Last year, they had six different guys throw a pass due to injuries and, you know, different stuff like that. They seem a little bit more secure this year in kind of what their identity is going to be. Mm-hmm. However, I just think that, you know, it's a completely different year as it is in, you know, if you had said, how is ASU going to look in a year? It's completely different than it was a year ago. You know, things change. So I think that they're confident, but it's not necessarily just because they have won before.
Okay. Eric Newman with us, Arizona Daily Sun sports editor there in Flagstaff. Chris Ball going into his fourth season. Eric, what do you make out of the job that he's done so far up there?
They've gotten better. You know, last year was tough. They had a few tough losses. You know, the national media was kind of giving them some attention because of the Arizona win. But that was on the heels of, you know, a couple losses, things like that. And they ended up 5-6 last year, but they're building. And part of that is the recruiting. And now it's, you know, 4 years in, really Chris Ball's classes of recruiting. It's kind of his team. There aren't so many guys. There are a few of them left that were recruited by other people, the coaches before him, but it's really starting to take his identity a little bit. And so I think this year is going to be an interesting one. And, to see kind of how that all works out now that it's, you know, fully a Chris Ball team.
Go back to the quarterback and settling on RJ Martinez, because a coach is only as smart as his quarterback, right? So
yeah,
what is it that fans will see next Thursday night when NAU shows up to play ASU?
RJ Martinez came in and part of what got him to the next level was he came in the middle of the Arizona game last year, was his first ever time hitting the field. He was a true freshman, came in and really played well. He started 7 out of the last 8 games, missed one due to injury. But he ended up throwing for 1,700 yards, 14 touchdowns, just 2 picks, a little bit of elusiveness running the ball. He's a good player, and he's still young. He's just a sophomore, so he really got his first full offseason this year. He's finally getting over a hamstring thing that bugged him during spring, but he's a smart quarterback, and from what I've seen, the receivers really like playing with him. So he's a good player, and he's got some accurate throws and everything. It's a question of whether ASU can get through NAU's O-line, which has had some injuries and, you know, uncertainties the last few weeks. If RJ's got a good pocket and everything and can make some moves, I think he's dangerous.
Is it his job, or are we going to see other quarterbacks next Thursday night? Is Chris committed to him?
It's his job unless something big happens, if he gets injured or something like that. Sure. He's the number one starter right now.
Okay. Complimentary pieces to go along with him. Walk the fans through what they'll see on the offensive side, the players that he's going to try to get in on the ground and through the air.
Kevin Daniels is the kind of number one running back. He came on last year as the starter. He played a little bit during the 2021 spring COVID season, but was still just a true freshman, didn't get the ball a ton. Last year, he was the first running back in NAU to get over 1,000 yards in several years. I think it might have been 10 years almost that they didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher. They've got George Robinson, who is a bigger guy, kind of strong, can get those small gains are on the goal line or 3rd and 1, 3rd and 2, stuff like that. So those are kind of the two running backs that are going to get the ball the most. But I think NAU's strength on its offense is its deep receiving core. Mm-hmm. And that's Hendricks Johnson, Coleman Owen, Stacey Chuck Umezi is rehabbing an injury, but he might be able to be back. Jamal Glaspie, and they've got so many receivers that kind of can do different things. So if there's time for RJ to get the ball out of his hands, they could be dangerous there.
Yeah, a couple of those names I saw here in the Valley, Coleman Owen in particular, was a terrific talent, terrific player. How is it that if Chris is building or has Chris has been building this program, that he's been able to come to the Valley? And I know having Coach Flugrad down here and just canvassing the Valley. Are those Valley players starting to pay off, in your opinion? Are you starting to see a predominant amount of Arizona high school kids get on the field and contribute there for Chris Ball?
Yes and no. You know, RJ Martinez, the starting quarterback, is from Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. So he's going to obviously play the best players. But it's hit and miss because there's 70 plus guys from Arizona that either grew up or played high school football in Arizona. And Coach Ball has told me this directly. He said, we're trying to make an Arizona high school all-star team. And some of the high school kids have also said that kind of thing. So there is, it's starting to be more and more because, like I said, it's his kids he's recruiting. There's some guys that have been around for 4 or 5 years now that are, you know, from wherever, but it's starting to be that there's more Arizona kids, you know, every year that are taking the field. So yes and no.
Yeah. I mean, a kid like Noah Nelson goes from being a star at Williamsfield to Oklahoma to Flagstaff. That's a pretty interesting journey. And those stories are interesting to watch, for me at least.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's kids like that that they want to see. And it's not, you know, you could call it moving down from the FBS level or whatever, but they want kids that, you know, want to get on the field that are from Arizona.
How is it working, Eric, in terms of now with the portal? And I think a program like Northern Arizona University can benefit and be hurt tremendously by the portal in this way. You're going to have players that will go to NAU. They're going to light it up at NAU, and then there's going to be the mistakes in the higher division programs, and they're going to come down and just snatch players away and break your heart and rip your heart out. Has that happened yet to Chris Ball in this new world that we live in transfer portal?
It hasn't been discussed in public. I think I would be surprised if they weren't at least thinking about it.
Sure.
But at the moment, nobody, you know, none of the big names, there have been some transfers, but none of the star players or anything have left. I think people that have, you know, seen the team grow and have been part of it are committed. That could change any time, though. But at the moment, no, there hasn't been any huge upsets in that way.
I mean, I think it's commendable that Chris has been able to keep his staff intact for the most part. And he's been able to keep kids in this first year of going into portal, of jumping up rather than staying there. I think that is really smart and a good sign on his part. I'm curious about the Big Sky in general. What's the view of the Big Sky at these high levels where you have the UCLAs and USCs that are moving conferences? That's going to have a trickle-down effect, in my opinion, at some point. It's not going to happen this year, but as the Big Sky as a whole, you cover NAU, you're around that conference. Is it solid? Is it looking to add? Is it looking to subtract? What's the view of the Big Sky?
So they just did within the last year lose Southern Utah, who admittedly wasn't one of the power conferences, but they were, you know, a solid team and not football necessarily, but some of the other sports. But at the moment, there doesn't seem to be a ton of movement in the Big Sky. You've got some really good teams. Montana State made the FCS championship game last year. There's some solid teams that it doesn't appear a lot of movements happening, but you never know. This college sports landscape is changing. It feels like every day there's something new that we hear.
Last question then on NAU as a whole, the athletic department, the facilities. I was up in Flagstaff about a month ago for my son's football camp up there. And it's amazing how much has transformed there. But are they done for now? Is the campus built out with facilities and commitment to football and other sports?
So I don't know fully the answer to that question, to be completely honest with you. I think that they're obviously happy about the, I think it was $50 million athletic facilities that they just put in, new weight room, new practice courts for basketball, kind of all that stuff. And so I think they might end up upgrading that, but it doesn't appear that there's a ton of other building in the near future. I wouldn't be surprised if they start looking at it, though. Mike Marlowe is the athletic director. He just won FCS Athletic Director of the Year within the last couple months. And I know that's something he likes doing. He likes building and he likes expanding what NAU can do. So I wouldn't be surprised if it does happen.
Yeah, Mike's come on board and he's done a lot. There's no question.
Yeah, about it. Absolutely.
Good stuff. I appreciate your time and your insight, and we'll do it again sometime. Thanks.
Absolutely.
There's Eric Newman, sports editor, Arizona Daily Sun. You can find his content also over on Arizona Varsity. He butchers and beats up on Zach Alvira, and we love it with glee. We're back with more after this time out. All right, as promised, this week on the Arizona Media Podcast, where we go deep with people in the Valley sports. Sometimes it's not sports, but this week it is sports. It's Cam Cox from Channel 12, their sports director. He is joining us today from a dungeon, a cave in Tennessee. That is the best way to describe this, right?
Yeah, it's there's not a solid light in this hotel room, Brad. So I got the curtains tugged back against a lamp. It's life on the road, right?
Life on the road. This is what this is about, Cam. This is, you know, the glamorous business that is. So let's...
been up since 6 a.m. and writing stories for today and stayed up till 1 writing stuff. So it's like, yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's fun, though. We can't complain, right, Brad? We're covering sports.
That's it. It's we're stealing money, as Charles Barkley would like to say. Where did your journey begin? Like, were you an athlete? What drew you to sports?
Oh, man, Brad, just growing up, I mean, that was like our family thing, Brad. You know, from when I was a little kid,
Where'd you grow up?
Playing all kinds of, Where'd you go? In Houston, Texas. Whether it was going to the Astrodome with my dad, I mean, he used to bring home, you know, work. He got season tickets through work, and he used to bring them home and let them out on the dining room table. And he'd be like, "All right, guys, y'all get 6 games, 8 games, whatever." We would look at him. When's Randy Johnson coming to town? When Greg Maddux is coming to town? When Ken Griffey is coming to town? So it was growing up, going to baseball games with dad, going to football games with my dad and my grandpa, you know, playing hoops outside with my mom. I mean, just all kinds of stuff, watching sports with my dad on the couch. So that was the introduction. Played everything growing up, played football, was fortunate enough to play a little bit of football into college. Sports, covering sports is something I originally did not want to do. I actually wanted to be a weatherman by the name of Mario Gomez when I was 9 years old at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. He worked for Channel 11 in Houston, put me on TV to like point when he was doing the weather. And my dad called everybody back then and was like, "Hey, you got to watch this." Ever since then, I wanted to be a weatherman. But then I got to high school and put letters with numbers in math. And that was the only C I ever made in high school. And so that was the end of my weatherman career. And so in college, it seemed fitting to do sports. And I tried some news. I love news. But sports has always been kind of my thing. It was just kind of an easy transition post playing career and all of that, and it's been a joy ever since. But sports has always been a massive part of my life, and it would be weird not to be around the game. Like, I couldn't picture myself, I'm sure you're the same way, Brad, of sitting in a normal office doing something else. My brother does that. I don't know how he does it. Nothing against people who do. I just couldn't imagine life without covering a game, telling a story, something like that. It'd be weird.
What level of football, or what position in football, I should ask, did you play in high school, and where was your high school?
Yeah, I went to Atascocita High School. It was in Humble, Texas. I originally started at Humble High School, the same high school that former Cardinals defensive end Bertrand Berry went to. It was kind of cool. When I moved out here, he was the one guy I was going to meet just because I used to pass by his picture every day at Humble High School. Also, David Boston went to Humble High School. And David Gibbs, I believe, the Patriots, former Patriots receiver too as well. But then they built Atascocita High School. Originally was a center. Then everybody was bigger than me on the offensive line, so they moved me to tight end. And by the end of my high school career, I played wide receiver for a year in college. And so it all kind of worked out. It was a lot of fun.
You see him on Channel 12. Cam Cox joins us. He's in a cave, a dungeon in Nashville, Tennessee with the Arizona Cardinals. So you did play in college. You were recruited, or did you just say, "I'm going to go to college, Eastern New Mexico," right?
Yeah, it was a mixture of both. The recruiting process for me was very different. I wasn't looked at by a lot of big schools by any means. And so my dad and I, for the back half of my high school career and into January, we took our own visits. We got in the car some Saturday morning and we drove around to different big schools that had broadcasting. It was kind of a mixture. I wanted a school that had a good broadcasting program because that was going to be my future. But I also wanted an opportunity to play. We went to several Division I schools. We went to, you know, D2 schools. We went to D1AA schools, I guess called FCS schools now. We went to a few NAI schools, went to a few D3 schools. So we drove around every Saturday. It felt like in November and in December and then some days in January, just trying to find the best fit for me. There were college coaches who would come by and recruit me, but it definitely wasn't like a, you know, like some of my other teammates who got some scholarship, big time scholarship offers. And so you kind of had to make my own luck in a way and get my own name out there. And it was a lot of fun doing that with my dad. Those are some of the best times. He was always right about everything. It seemed like everywhere we go, he had to put and end up being true on things. You know, Brad, you're a dad. You just, y'all guys got like this sixth sense. And whatever it is, it just kind of works out. And so Eastern was the last school we visited. And I told my dad for months, "Dad, I'm not going to Eastern New Mexico. You can't even find on the map." You know, they were the one school that actually came and recruited me. But I just said, "Dad, I'm not going that far. Never going to happen." And one Saturday morning, he just woke me up and said, "Hey, we're getting on a flight in 2 hours. Get dressed, pack a bag." We were flying to Lubbock. We were renting a car and then driving to New Mexico to kind of take a visit and to check it out. You know, he just had this thing where he just said I needed to look at it. And by the end of the trip, as we were leaving, you know, that hour and a half back drive from Port Talis to Lubbock, Texas, to get on a plane, he said he knew that's where I was going to school. So the last place we visited was the place where I ended up going to college.
That's awesome. Cam Cox with us from Channel 12. So on the media podcast this week, when you're looking at colleges and you go to Eastern, Did they have a broadcast program that had done things, or was it just simply we have a broadcast department?
No, to me, it rivals ASU. The only thing different is that ASU has hundreds and hundreds of kids, maybe even thousands of kids, however many people were in that Cronkite program. We had like 25. The news director's name was John Kirby. I believe he's a GM in Colorado now. I forget which station it is. I think it's in Colorado Springs, but he kind of worked in San Antonio all over as a reporter and as an anchor too as well. And he ran that program like a small news station, like a small market news station. There was about 25 of us. We all produced. We all, you know, did the weather. We all did sports. We all anchored the news. We all reported. We all helped write. We shot our own stuff. We had a live truck to do weather live shots, to do live shots in general from different stories. You know, we shot football games. I mean, we did everything these Cronkite students here at ASU get to do. We were very blessed to do as well. And that kind of sold me. Like he said, you know, you're going to leave college with a job in one hand and a very good education in the other. And I did just that. And it was really cool to get that experience. When I got to my first job, it seemed like we'd already been doing a lot of the same things. The only difference was in my first job, it was every day. Like that was the biggest switch. It's no longer like, hey, you only have 4 days a week you're doing a show, or 3 days a week you're doing a show, and you have a week to turn in a story. No. Every day you got to come with different ideas. That was the biggest difference. But it was run just like a small market news station. And that's what I think prepared me and sold me to begin with. On Eastern, the football team was great. The dorm rooms, I mean, everything else was fine. The college was in the middle of nowhere. I've never been that far away from home or in that kind of setting. But it was definitely worth it. And it was the best choice for me as far as I was going to get my education. I knew I wasn't going to go to the NFL by any means. So making sure that I found a school that furthered my dream of being a broadcaster was very important. And Eastern was that choice.
When you walked off the field for your final game, did you know it? This is it. I'm turning it in. It's over. No turning back. Where was that game? What was the emotion like?
I didn't play in that game, but when I walked off, I thought I was going to train in the off season and get back to it. And I think it was in April. It was before the end of the semester. My news director, Mr. Kirby, came to me and he was like, "Cam, come on. It's time to get real." He's like, "Come commit yourself to the program. Like, let's get to work. Let's start building this thing." Cause my freshman year schedule, Brad, was just, I mean, meetings, early in the morning, lifts, all the above. And like, you were just trying to figure out how to squeeze time to get to that program. And to like, I would show up as the newscast was going, I'd help run tapes. I'd help write some stuff at the end. I'd try and get to the late meeting that they had after the broadcast, and I'd go to a football meeting or skip lunch or, you know, to go to their afternoon meeting or something. Like, it was just a wild, you know, year in it. And after that, he was just like, "Come on, come commit. Like, let's get to work." And that was the best decision besides going to Eastern. That was the second best decision, I think, early on in my career that I ever made was giving up football. As hard as that was, it was just the right choice, the right timing. And he tricked me. So I thought I was going to come in and, you know, do sports. I was looking forward to it. I was going to cover Eastern. I was going to do play by play. I was going to host a radio show. Like, I was going to do all this stuff. And I was looking forward to doing sports on TV. But then after I decided to stop playing football, that first meeting we had, he was like, "You're going to do news for an entire year. You're not allowed to say a score. You're not allowed to go to a game to cover it. You can go watch it. You're not covering it." So for the next year, I was just a news reporter. I was a news anchor. I was a news producer. And it was the best change of view I had early on in my career, because it taught me to look at stories a different way. It taught me to interact with people in a different way. I mean, I was going to town hall meetings. I was going to farms to cover agricultural stories and water this. And I mean, things that I never talked about in my entire life and settings that I was uncomfortable in because I'd never been in. But it was one of the best choice paths. And by the end of the year, Brad, I thought I wanted to be a news reporter, but I was like, I'm good. I'll do sports instead. But it taught me they're all the same thing. News and sports are exactly the same. You're just changing details. You're telling a story. It's literally the same thing. That just don't get, you know, some, I feel like some people sometimes when they look at the two different things, they get all flustered because it's like, it's a news story. It's a sports story. It is literally all the same thing. You're just there to tell a story. You're there to tell what happened, the who, what, when, where, why, and how. And it was that 1 year doing news that kind of like taught me that and gave me the belief that you know, I could do both if I needed to. And I have done that since, you know, I'm, you know, yeah, I tell sports most of the time, but I've done news. I've anchored the morning show. So it was definitely a weird thing to do that full year. And I was disappointed I wasn't going to do sports, but it was one of the best things for my career early on.
What was the journey then from college? How did you end up at 12? Where were your stops? Where was the best? Where was the worst? The moment you're like, I'm going to quit. I can't do this anymore. Take me through that stretch.
There wasn't, Brad, you know, there wasn't bad stops because every stop had like a purpose. And I'm a big why guy. Like I always tell my guys and our team, like, hey, you could tell me why. Tell me why all day. And we might disagree on what it is and how we get there. But like, if you have a reason, I'm all for it. That's the biggest thing. Like that means you believe something and that means you have a way of doing it that you believe in. And so every stop I had was different. But it was all, there was a purpose behind everything. My first stop out of college was in Monroe, Louisiana, basically go to Doug Dynasty, take a left. And, that's Monroe, Louisiana. Most people probably can't. Yeah, you remember that show? Remember with the beards, Brad?
Yeah.
So I think our station was like the first station to put them on TV before they got famous and all that.
That's awesome.
But that was like backwoods, West Monroe. Yeah. But yeah, it was in Monroe, Louisiana, which is in Northeast Louisiana. And it, you know, like I said, I don't think most people can find it on a map, but it was such a great local sports market. Like people, everybody in town watched. It was so cool to just be walking around and people would mention different things that were going on in the community. And we tried to get to all of them. The sports director there, his name is Aaron Beecher. At the time, he had been there for like, I want to say 12 years. He's still there to this day. I would go to the store, his player of the week in high school sports. You know, he would have him in the office. So I would grab one time and wear it to the store and somebody would stop me and they'd be like, how'd you get that shirt? What'd you do? Would you set a record? How'd you get, you know, what did you do to get that shirt? I'm like, Aaron just gave it to me. He'd go, that's not how it works. You can't wear that shirt if you didn't earn it. So people just ate, they just consumed their life with what was going on locally. And it was just so cool to see. And we had three Division I colleges that we covered within a 50-mile radius. We covered a lot of high school sports. We covered the Saints. We went to LSU games, LSU baseball games, football games. So from a, you know, first job standpoint, like I couldn't have been more blessed. And the guy I learned from, Aaron, like he knew the scene. He knew how to tell stories. It was the craziest thing. We had a tape editor. I don't know if your listeners know what that is, but back in the day, we used to shoot on like videotape that you would like pop in a VCR kind of in a way. And you used to edit that on this big machine that looked like I was one big boxes, Brad. You know what I'm talking about. They're hard to explain, but he could knock out a story in like 5 minutes. And here I would be on the computer trying to click and drag and do different things. And he'd be like, you're not done yet? So Monroe was fun. Monroe was a good time. I spent 10 months there, got a job in San Antonio, Texas after that, working at WOAI for two legends, two of the best storytellers, I believe, Don Harris and David Chancellor. They actually found my college tape that I had sent out. They didn't know I got a job already. They had a stack of tapes, probably like this high off the ground. That was back when we used to send CDs to everybody and you had a resume. And I probably spent thousands of dollars out of college, like making a nice folder from Walmart, resume on one side, cover letter, and just send them out everywhere. More stations than you probably should have, but that was kind of how we did it back in the day. And they found my tape in the middle. And they said they'd been going through tapes. If some didn't work, they threw it out. They, you know, if it didn't play right away, they popped it out, threw it out. And so they found my old tape and they called me and offered me a job after that. Then they saw my new tape from Stuff in Monroe and they liked me. And I spent 2 years there, got to cover the Spurs in their two final runs when they lost to the Heat, Ray Allen shot. And then the final year when they came back and beat the Heat in five games and ended the big three in Miami, which I still think is one of the greatest comeback stories in sports because it was the same teams basically going at it all over again. And then after that, got a job here at 24. I've been here 8 years now, Brad, which is crazy.
Who helped you most at 12 or who has helped you most at 12? And if you feel like, come on, Brad, it's a team deal. I get that. But, you know, you came in with Bruce Cooper and you've had people very talented that have been there in front of and behind the scenes on the camera. You've got Mark Curtis who did the thing from sports to news. So you've had a lot there to help you out, I would believe.
Yeah, bro, I'm a big history guy. So, like, when I have kids, I read my son's history book for the fun of it just because I always loved history. And so having a guy like Bruce Coop, I mean, Coop, I still talk to this day. He retired a year and a half ago, Brad, and he'll call me 4 times a week, and we have hour conversations. Like, there's never a short conversation with Coop. He's like a brother to me. I mean, it's been so cool to have that relationship, and just late nights that we would stay at the station and just talk until midnight. We'd walk out together every day. You know, it's so funny early on when he and I would debate on the air. Sometimes people would be like, why are you and Coop yelling at each other? And it's just, those are the office debates we always have. And we always would walk out together like two brothers at the end of the day. And so getting to learn behind him and his investment in the community, like when you see someone who was that involved and cared that much about people and about relationships and about high school coaches, college coaches, and all the above, it just kind of makes you want to be the same way. It makes you want to go out and, one, keep the reputation that 12 had, and then, two, continue what he and Mark Curtis had built here at 12 and the people before that too as well. And Coop had helped me out a lot, helping make contacts early on, you know, helping me tell stories, helping me learn the area. You know, he's lived here his entire life. I was new to the place and I wanted this to feel like home, and that took a while. It feels like home now. It took a while, but like following in his footsteps was very important to me, and continuing his legacy, honoring that in the best way I can and could, is very important to me. Same thing with Mark Curtis and all his adventures that he's been on. You know, they've seen so much, and so it was really cool to learn behind them. It still is cool. Mark is still there, so it's very fortunate. Mark Casey was the news director that hired me. I'm forever grateful for him, and our executive producer Jeff Schneider. You know, he's been like a second dad to me. I say that because, you know, he's a little bit older than me, but it's just a cool relationship we built throughout the years. And I'm just very thankful to where I landed and to learn behind those guys. And there's been other people too as well. We had a producer, Matt Johnson. We have a producer right now named Jeff. And I mean, just guys that you lean on in tough times. You know, I've worked with great co-anchors too as well. From Tressa Tudrick to Chirsten Soussel, Lena Washington. We got Luke now. I mean, it's just very blessed to like be surrounded by good people my entire time at 12. It's fun.
All right, a couple other questions. I'll let you go. Cam Cox is with us on the Arizona Media Podcast, just chopping it up. So let's go through process of today for a few minutes. You have already said you've started this morning at 6 a.m. You are in Tennessee, in Nashville with the Arizona Cardinals. So just walk the viewer, the listener, because there's attorneys, doctors I find that listen to these are saying, I hate what I'm doing. I want to be Cam Cox. I want to be Brad Susmat. I want to be fill in the blank. And they don't get the amount of time that you're working. And oh, by the way, you work nights, weekends, and holidays. Yeah. That's part of the deal. That's when sports happen. So walk them through what today is like. Have you already heard from Jeff Schneider, your EP? Just what the day is like for you laying out.
You know what, Brad, we don't do brain surgery, so I don't want to doctors and lawyers and fire, you know, they do such an important job. You know, we're here for, you know, the people that watch us, and hopefully give them a little break from things, hopefully maybe inspire them a little bit with stories we can tell through the people's journeys and stuff like that. So it's not brain surgery. Yep. The days can be a little long and can be a little draining, and you know that you've lived a whole career on it. It's just sometimes it is what it is. So out here in Nashville, we had one practice with the Cardinals yesterday, and so we had to gather content for the next 3 days. And so we got 7 to 10, I can't remember exactly how many interviews that we were able to get yesterday, but a bunch of different stories lined up. And so we told a bunch of stories yesterday. We got more today. That's why I was up so early. I was writing the different shows from today. I was mapping out what stories we were going to do. I was getting ahead a little bit on tomorrow. So you're up early. My producer calls me every morning around like 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning just to kind of check in, to let kind of know what we got going on today, where different people are going. Just because I'm here in Nashville, there's still plenty of sports going on in the Valley. There's high school scrimmages. We get ready, you know, for another year. Friday night feed, high school sports. There's, you know, ASU is getting ready for their opener. I believe NAU is going to hold something for soon because they play ASU in their opener. The D-backs are doing things too. So it's like, he was trying to get caught up in what we're putting in shows, what other people are covering. And so that's kind of the morning, at least how I spent my morning. I always, you got to get up early, especially on the West Coast, because, you know, East Coast is 3 hours in front of you. And if you sleep into like 8 or 9, that's like noon out there. And so the full day has passed and there could be news that have happened and so many different things. So that's why I always tell people it's important to get up and at least check to see what's going on in the world and figure out if you missed anything or whatever, just for your day. So got up early, always check Twitter, always check the local newspaper websites just to see what's going on in the area, kind of map out the day, write some stuff. We're going to have a media availability with the Cardinals here in a little bit, and then we'll have some downtime to more prep for the shows. And then we're live this evening, and then we have a live 10 o'clock show. So we're, it's a little bit of a break, but we're writing to head and stuff. So it's just, it's a long day. It can be a long day on the road, and they can be some long days at the shop in Phoenix, but it's all worth it. All worth it.
How do you take care of your mental health on that? And I ask this because mental health has now become something that I talk to everybody about. And it's very important because you've got to be fresh. And there's times where you've got to be looking into the camera or talking into the microphone. And you've got to go pay your bills, or you've got to go to the doctor's office, or you've got to go do this or do that. And at the same time, there could be a trade that goes down, or there could be something legal that goes down. And, you know, you've had some of that here in this offseason with the Cardinals, where a player's driving 120 miles per hour, and that just shows up on your doorstep at 7:10 in the morning. Now your whole day is turned upside down. How do you handle your mental health side?
Yeah, a story like that, I mean, when that, you know, falls in your lap that early in the morning, that all of a sudden becomes like your morning. You start making phone calls, you start trying to get information. So that's where your morning can get upside down. Just when things happen, when big things like that happen, you got to get on it. That's just part of the job. You know, you got to cover big stories well. And so that's just, you got to get that. The mental health, Brad, that took me a while to figure out. I'll be real with you. You know, I was always that guy, especially early on, like, hey, let's go to work. Come on, let's work. You know, let's go do this. I'll go do that. That's just kind of how I was, you know, on the football field. It's kind of how I was in college with internships. Like, so my first job where you did everything yourself and then you got a little more help, but then you got help like we do here at 12. But, you know, it was for a long time, it was just that mindset of go. And you realize, you kind of look up one day and you're like, man, I need some balance in life. Mm-hmm. And I stress that to people early on, like, it's important to work. Don't get me wrong. Mike worked his entire life. He's still working. You know, there's many days he gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning and he'll call me just to say, hey, you want to say good morning? And what are you doing? He'll be like, I'm sleeping, Dad. It's 5 o'clock my time or whatever. He's like, well, get up, time to go. And so, you know, he still works. My grandpa worked till he was 90 on a printing business for 40 years that my mom still runs. My brother works a very tough job all the time. And so it's important to work, and it's important to car. You got to have that work ethic and you got to be able to turn it on. But I tell everybody, it's also important to find some balance. And that took me many years to figure out, to have that balance in life and to be able to turn the phone off sometime, to be able to go enjoy different things and be present in the moment on things. I started to play golf about 4 years ago. I was off Mondays and Tuesdays for most of my career, and picked up golf about 4 years ago. That was a good break. Try and get better at. Started playing pickleball here within the last few years. That's been fun. Just doing different things involves that break and really trying to enjoy my off days and like unplug a little bit and step away. And, you know, we got good people who, you know, we in our department that can do the job too as well. It's what you got a team for, Brad. It's what you have your team for, you know, you got to divide up things too as well. And so it's important to have that balance in life. When you go to a bunch of different things, that'll help you out mentally. I'm not saying it's, you know, you 50-50 or it doesn't have to be that, but it's important to find things that you enjoy in life outside of work. And to make sure that there's a good balance, because if not, I mean, the job can consume you, and it's not a good feeling when you kind of look one day and you just, you know, all you do is kind of work. And then, so that can get a little tough. But it's definitely important to find that balance in life. And, that's been one thing that I've enjoyed finding is that balance. And so it's still a work in progress. It's tough for me to unplug. I'll find that balance, and that'll help you out mentally.
Yeah, no, that's well put. I don't think that people understand that, you know, this thing is great, but at the same time, if you're not able to just turn your mind off and say, I'm out here on the golf course and what if this happens or what if that happens or something that you think is a really, really big deal and it turns out it's a nothing. And your whole day was consumed with making sure that you didn't get beat by somebody at another station, which I think there's less and less of that now. We all have our competitive juices. But with this thing now, it's if it happens in a second or 10 seconds and you're 20 minutes reacting to it, I don't think the consumer out there is like, well, he was 20 minutes behind. I think a lot of that is just within our own industry. And I think it can be hurtful and destructive to people that are on air and behind the scenes, too. I see where there's I know producers that have been doing this 20, 30 years and they wake up one day and they're like, what have I done? I missed everything with my family. And that's not good.
Yeah, I love BA. I remember BA said, you know, he'd fire a coach if you ever missed a dance recital and, you know, something that involves his kids or anything like that. You know, you can come back to the office. And Brad, that's like really true when you think about it. Like, just because you're not the first person to react to whatever news on Twitter, like, do it on your own time sometimes. Like, I know it's important to be first sometimes. And I always say it's important to be first and right when you do things. And so, you know, it's okay. We all have lives. We all have different goods. It's okay to find that balance. It took me a while to figure it out, but it definitely is it's okay to do that sometimes. And it's any, no matter what it is, my dad, my brother does that, my mom does that, what else in life?
That's good stuff. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time. Safe travels and good work there. Appreciate you chopping it up. Thanks.
As always, it's good to see you, buddy.
There's Cam Cox with us. You can see him on 12 News, and we appreciate his time, and we're back with more after this timeout.